Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Syracuse already clinched their best season since 2001. Basketball hasn't lost since we last spoke. Women's basketball has won a bunch since we last spoke.
Women's basketball is killing it.
Yeah, they're great. Mostly good things. Net positive.
The volleyball team made the NCAA tournament for the first time ever.
We had a whole host of all ACC football players, including one that should have been a lot higher.
Yeah, why don't we jump into that?
Okay.
Because for anyone who's been on the Syracuse corner of the internet today, Monday, you probably saw the ACC release its all-conference teams pretty late in the day, to be honest. They usually do it on the Tuesday after the season ends.
And they knew we were coming.
Yeah, they knew we were coming, and they thought that the more time they gave us to get everything ready to go, the more angry we were going to be. Eric Dungy was a third-team All-ACC quarterback. Makes no sense when you look at the numbers, his importance to the team, probably numerous other factors. Ryan Finley got a pretty sizable amount of the vote here, and a lot of this, and this goes for every year, you know, a lot of this is dictated by just how many. There's 46 media members in the panel. Many of them are in the Tobacco Road general area, or North Carolina or South Carolina. They're old members of the ACC. A lot of these folks have been covering the conference for, you know, two, three, four decades. So again, shouldn't shock that most of the people selected to these teams, especially the first team, were players that are in the kind of traditional footprint of the ACC. It's not to slight Syracuse completely. I mean, they did get 9 players on the All-ACC team overall.
I thought the other 8, like, not to cut you off, I thought the other 8 were all, like, very fair. And, like, even some surprises, like Sean Riley getting in there on the third team, which was, like, not a super obvious spot for him, so they put him as an all-purpose back, which doesn't really make sense, but I guess, like, for his overall impact to make sense, and getting a bunch of the offensive linemen on there, I think Slayton probably should have gotten third team, but it's hard to, like, really, like, that's, if you're not, like, disagree between third team and honorable mention, it is what it is. But overall, I thought they did a really nice job with Syracuse, just the Dungy thing. I know, like, you have to pry in a little bit to, like, see where he should have been higher, and I kind of get why the two guys that gotten higher than him did, but it does feel lazy based on proximity and based on, like, it almost felt like they went with, like, here are the two quarterbacks that are probably going to be the biggest NFL prospects going forward versus, like, who had the biggest impact in the college game. And I find it hard to, I mean, A, Dungy outdueled Finley this year and put up better overall numbers, and you can't just take away the rushing. That's a huge part of his impact. And B, like, Lawrence was very good this year, and he got better as the year went on, but I think Dungy meant a lot more to Syracuse than Lawrence. I mean, I think Clemson would have been fine if Kelly, I don't think they would have any more or fewer, I think they'd have the same record if Kelly Bryant stayed. I think they probably would have been close to undefeated if Chase Brice had to start. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest slight in the world, but it would have been nice for him to get, like, at least second team.
Yeah, and, you know, I mentioned this in the post too, like, Finley can pass for as many yards as he wants. It didn't matter against Syracuse. You know, his running game was so bad that it didn't necessarily, it showed in that game in particular that his passing abilities and his passing statistics didn't necessarily make the difference in the game. You know, Trevor Lawrence wasn't having the best game against Syracuse before he went out with an injury before halftime in that game. Like, I'm sure he would have done fine in the second half. Who knows if Clemson would have won, but that could have easily changed the course of the game. I know head-to-head's not part of these votes, but it is worth considering from a Syracuse fan perspective that, like, you know, Dungy did look better than both quarterbacks for the 1.5 games he faced them both.
Yeah, like, Lawrence didn't really get anything going. I mean, they just ran the hell of the ball afterwards, but, like, Lawrence was pretty pedestrian against us before he got knocked out, and, like, Finley was fine. He was, like, he played well. He put up big numbers. But Dungy, clearly, I mean, he outplayed him. He outdueled him, and he got the win. So, obviously, head-to-head isn't, like, really a factor here. But just overall, like, I can understand why things went the way they did with quarterback, and it was a competitive position. But it's not surprising that we are a little bit irked, especially how he finished the year with that 6 touchdown demon against Boston College.
Right. I mean, one player had 32 touchdowns, and the other two did not.
Yes.
Worth mentioning. Also worth mentioning, since we're on the All-ACC team conversation, there were only 2 freshmen on the first team. Both of them were Syracuse players. Andre Sisco was the lone freshman on defense. He got 110 votes out of a possible 180. And then Andre Schmidt, the Lou Groza Award finalist, hit 28 of 32 field goals this year. He is the only freshman on special teams with 165 out of a possible 180 votes. He's one of the highest vote getters on the entire thing. The only players that beat him out were Greg Dortch, Mitch Hyatt, and Travis Etienne. So not bad showing from Syracuse on that first team. I mean, yes, two of those guys, Hoffrichter being another member of the first team, were special teams. Cisco, I was actually surprised he hit first team. I think a lot of people have seen... I think this also speaks to, you know, I know you saw my tweet earlier just kind of talking about, like, a lot of these writers, like, either it was biased completely against the you know, non-traditional parts of the conference, or it was a quick stat sort on any number of websites where you just look at the ACC players, you hit sort on passing yards or touchdowns, you see Dungy's not at the top, you don't put him at the top. I think in some ways, you know, Cisco might have been the beneficiary there, and it seems like a lot of writers understand who he is and the coaches too, because they look at the interceptions leaders, they see he's tied for first nationally, and they go, oh, okay, this guy must be really good.
Yeah, there could definitely be some of that. Not with Cisco. Like, I think it was, you know, not that I have an in-depth knowledge of every safety in the league, but I feel like it's hard to really argue because he's been more than just the interceptions. I said it during the BC game. Like, he is really crafted into a very good all-around defensive back, which isn't always what you get with these, like, ball hawks. Like, sometimes they're very good at the one thing, but they can't tackle. They're really bad. They're not great in coverage.
He wasn't earlier in the year.
And yeah, he definitely got a lot better. Like, by the year's end, he was playing like one of the best players on the team, regardless of year. And I mean, I expect him to just keep on getting better. You know, he's a guy that we might not get a full 4 years out of because he, with his ability to read the ball. And then he's also like just gotten so much better in run support. Just overall, it's really impressive to see how he developed over the course of the season.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, I don't want anyone to think that I was slighting him. I think it's more just talking to, like, you and I know that about Cisco because we've watched the games, because we've seen the progression, because we watch him in coverage and know what he's doing. I think more just pointing out that, you know, the interceptions is an easy thing for lazy writers or coaches, or at least their, you know, staff, someone who's filling out these bracket, these things for them, can see that and go, oh, this guy is good. Easily quantifiable. Second team, Jamal Custis. I think some of that is related to kind of how he played earlier in the season versus later. I think he still deserved all conference honors. But just a note, Alton Robinson, second team. Guy had 10 sacks this year, and honestly, like, I felt like his impact was... Like, the 10 sacks sounds big, and it is. It's one of the better figures in Syracuse history in a single season, but... Like, his impact on a game-to-game basis cannot be overstated. Like, he was fantastic. Him and Kendall Coleman both did a great job, and Robinson really started to make his presence shown in that second half, or at least late first half into the second half against BC. Ryan Guthrie, another guy who played a great, great second half of the season, led the team in tackles, I think, pretty much every game from North Carolina on. He was another guy who, you know, great to see him get second-team honors. I know Dungy we mentioned, Sean Riley we mentioned, Coda Martin got a nice nod over at the offensive tackle spot. And beyond that, yeah, that was everybody that got onto the actual teams. Cody Conway and Chris Layton were both honorable mentions.
I think, honestly, like, Alton Robinson is easily on the short list for best players in the team. I think you have to keep Dungy at number one, but if you're doing a top five, I think Alton Robinson was probably the best player on defense this year, maybe the most important player on defense for what you said. Like, he brought so much pressure in addition to the sacks. He had, I think, like, something like 21 tackles for loss this year. I can't even fathom how many, like, quarterback hurries. I'm not sure if there's an official stat up there on the SU website, but he was huge. And then Guthrie, a really well-deserved second teamer. Guthrie's emergence in mid-year is basically, like, when our run defense ever became great, but after the Clemson and Pitt losses were very much predicated on the run defense being, you know, they were just not stopping runs in late game situations. Guthrie really came along basically right after that and cut down on the run as a major weapon that could be used against us, to where we couldn't just, like, you couldn't run in the fourth quarter on us and expect to come back from deficits. And even with a team like BC, which obviously AJ Dillon left the game with his ankle being all knocked up as it's been for a couple weeks, but Boston College generally runs the ball well, whoever's coming out of the backfield, because their offensive line's very good and they're just, like, really well built in that system. And our defense pretty much completely shut down that running attack, which was big. And that's why I think we were able to build that distance between us in the fourth quarter. And Guthrie was just a monster racking up tackles in that system where, you know, he was tasked with a lot of one-on-one situations, and it could have gone poorly, but he was became such a sure tackler down the stretch. The defense really would have been much more of a problem area late in games if not for his emergence late in the year.
Yeah, and that speaks to, you know, how well he was scouted by the staff, too. Like, Guthrie was not that type of player in college. I don't think he was really that type of player last year when we used him either. We used him in part on at linebacker, in part as defensive end, in spots when we were dealing with some injuries. But, like, at the JUCO ranks, he was a big tackle for loss guy. And you know, I think he led JUCO for a season, but he was the type of guy who, you know, really would have fit into the old Schaefer system. And for him to be able to, you know, by the time mid-year hit, completely change on a dime, completely turn around the way he was playing and turn into a second-team all-conference guy who was really critical to stopping the run, I mean, can't say enough about it. And, like, I don't know, you know, what his pro prospects might look like. I think he's a little bit on the smaller end for pro ball, but at the same time, like, people said that about Zaire Franklin. People said that about Paris Bennett before he retired. So, like, I think he might have played his way at least into an undrafted free agency conversation. I mean, who knows? You mentioned Robinson's stats. QB hurries. He's got 11 on the season, 3 forced fumbles, 2 pass breakups. So, like we mentioned, really impacting the game in all aspects. And you and I were really high on him going into the season and talking about how much of an impact he made last year without having a full training camp. So it was great to see him really put it together this season. And you know, next year he will be probably one of the best defensive linemen in the conference, assuming that he's back with us next year.
Yeah, I honestly think the defensive staff overall really deserves a lot of credit, because the team made pretty stark improvements, especially in the second half after those 2 losses, and there wasn't like a ton done in terms of like steam or whatnot, but players just seemed to be put in better positions, and just across the board, everyone I thought started playing better over the course of the season, which isn't usually what you get, honestly, with injuries and whatnot, and we survived some injuries. We survived whatever the situation with Anton Torti is. Hopefully everything's okay with him, but he missed our last 2 games. And there was, you know, the attrition that usually killed the SU team in years past. Like, the defense improved over the course of the year instead of getting worse, which has generally been the case. So I think Brian Ward's done a really nice job. And hopefully that the staff, you know, can kind of ride that momentum. We've seen some pretty big recruiting gains in the last couple of days, which is nice, because that was, like, kind of an area of concern for a little bit. We hadn't gotten a lot during the winning streak that we had before the Notre Dame game. And we've really seen that ramp up as we approach the December break here, and this is where I think we'll see a lot of that action, especially as we lead to the early signing period. I would expect that we start to fill some more of these spots.
Yeah, and we only have like a handful of spots left, but, you know, really, really nice work in the last few weeks by Syracuse, especially in that like 24-hour stretch where Cornelius Nunn comes back, which was not at all expected.
Pair of 4 starter linebackers.
Yeah, Jones. How do we say, is it Lee K. Pogba or is it just Pogba? Have we, as anybody?
I saw a pronunciation and I don't remember what it was. I think it might just be Pogba.
No, so we can make the soccer references.
Yep, and we could have either way. I mean,
I know. But yeah, 2 4-star guys and a high 3. That's awesome. It's great to see. There's a huge emphasis, to be honest, on the defensive side of the football in this recruiting class. There's a couple more guys we're trying to close on. I think I saw a lot of concerns start to pop up when the numbers were pretty low and we had lost 1 or 2 guys kind of mid-cycle. Now we got one of those guys back, which again never happens in none. And then we got some better guys. So
yeah, I mean, according to 24/7, our 3 highest ranked composite recruits are Jones, Pogba, and Nunn, who all committed on the 20th or 21st. So pretty good work. And like you said, it's been a very defense-heavy class, on the offensive side. It's a lot of linemen, a couple of offensive linemen, a tight end. So which makes sense, because like if you look at our roster, we're pretty well situated at the skill positions. We have our quarterback for the next few years at least. Plus we have Chance Amy, who we'll hopefully develop. But defense, I think, is where we're going to lose more guys, and you can always use the depth. So it makes a lot of sense that this is the defense-heavy class after like the last couple of years. We've just brought in so many wide receivers. We've brought a bunch of backs the last couple of years. Our offensive line, we have a pretty good young unit where some of those guys have gotten some work. So I'm pretty happy with stocking up on these linebackers and these other playmakers.
Yeah, and like it's in, you know, you mentioned that we lose them on defense. Like this isn't even like a total overhaul like we've had in the past either, which is great. Like we lose Cordy, we lose Slayton, we'll lose Guthrie, and
yeah, just guys in spots. We might lose. I mean, Robinson could leave. I wouldn't be shocked, but there's no guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a better raw player than like Ron Thompson was when he left.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he left. I hope he doesn't. But, like, I think we could still deal with that because I think a lot of the other defensive linemen have played quite well, too. Like, he's the key guy, but if you lose a guy like that, like, that's the price of doing business with having really good players. So, I think we're just really well situated on both sides of the ball heading into next year, and getting the bowl game at all is nice because we get this extra month of work to put in, but especially getting the extra month and getting some of the younger guys who will step into big roles next season. But I've seen a little bit of discussion on it both in Slack with the Noon staff and also on Twitter. Like, next year shouldn't be a major step down, even without Dungy and some of the other seniors. Like, if anything, I think this team could improve next season and really cement itself as like an upper echelon ACC team for a bit here.
Yeah, I completely agree. Why don't we actually talk about that a little bit before we pivot over to basketball? And I don't want to jinx anything, get ahead of ourselves. That said, you look at this schedule, we've got at Liberty, at Maryland. There's a gap in there that's probably going to be filled by an ACC game. And then Western Michigan, who should be, you know, even further removed from kind of the PJ Fleck heights, though Lester's still been recruiting well. And then Holy Cross. So nice September, even before you count for the ACC game. Road games, 3 out of the 4, maybe all 4 manageable, at Duke, at Florida State, at Louisville, at NC State. And then home games against BC, Clemson, Pitt, and Wake. We'll see where Florida State and Louisville are next year. I think that this year was an anomaly just in terms of how far they fell, especially Louisville. But at the same time, and not because Louisville is better than Florida State, I think more because Louisville fell to depths unseen for a like upper echelon in the conference program. But yeah, there's only one surefire loss on the schedule, and that's Clemson. And
is it even though? It's like, not that I'm saying we should beat Clemson with any regularity, but like we almost beat Clemson this year. We beat them last year. I would say it's like, you know, when you go through your projections, it's probably a loss. But like, this team has proven it can play with Clemson. So
I just I know that they lose a lot on defense. My one concern is that Lawrence is so much better now.
That's true.
Than he was.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be distinct favorites, but
we're going to be a top 20 team. I mean, looking at the schedule, right. Like, whether the talent's completely there or not, like, this is, as long as Babers is back, and as long as everybody that we think is going to be back on this team is there, and provided we don't, you know, have some terrible injuries befall us, this schedule's super manageable again, and, like, super manageable on the road, most importantly, because honestly, like, we looked really good against BC on the road. We almost beat Pitt on the road. We looked great against Wake Forest on the road. Take those teams and, like, Wake Forest loses a couple more like bigger names. I think their quarterback situation is going to be better. Pitt might be just as good, if not a little bit better. BC, that really all depends on Dylan's health.
I think BC will probably be around the same, if not a little better, because yeah. Brown will be a year better. Dylan, if he's healthy, he'll still be there. I think BC is like kind of what they are now, and that's not
dudes.
Great, but I mean, their fans don't seem to be. Yeah, they're dudes. They're like 7-8 win dudes. Which is nice. Like, I would, like, I know BC fans are getting a little, like, annoyed, but, like, you're BC, and we're in the same spot. Like, this was a great year for us. If we're doing this more often than not, we have, like, really transformed the program. I'm not saying BC can't be better on a year-to-year basis, but, like, if this is your floor with Adazio, like, there are much worse things. And I don't think Adazio's a great coach, but
the problem is, it's not just their floor, it's also their ceiling.
That's the bigger concern. But you have a young quarterback, you have a really good running back. Like, they could be an 8-9 win team next year if things break right.
Well, let me take a look. We're not going down this full rabbit hole. I'm just curious who they're facing next year.
Well, a quick diversion.
Ooh, this is this schedule's right out of the goddamn Syracuse playbook.
They have Notre Dame.
They got Richmond, fine. Kansas, I mean, fine probably, but less miles. At Rutgers, at Notre Dame.
They should win three of those.
But, like, why would you do this to yourself? Like, you don't need to do this. You don't need to schedule 3 Power 5 teams.
Yeah, but 2 of them are, like,
yeah,
probably the 2 worst Power 5 teams.
You know what, though? Kansas actually improved over the course of the year, and I feel
they did. Kansas was the best they've been in a long time this year. It wasn't great, but they were competitive-ish. Unless, I know people are, like, really making fun of the Les Miles hire.
I don't think it's bad if he hires smart coordinators.
I think you're setting, if you're Kansas, you need to build some kind of like baseline infrastructure for a football program, and they just haven't had that, and Les will do that. I don't think they're ever going to win the Big 12 with him, But at least you get to like where you're a functional program, and then you and he'll have a role in finding a successor. You would think
the poor man's Iowa State.
If they become that, like, and Les is a little more open to being more forward thinking, which maybe he will be because the pressure to beat Alabama will be off, and you don't have to worry about like what's who cares if they win four games next year? That's like Les Miles doesn't have to really show anything for like 3 or 4 years in terms of wins. I don't think.
I'd be pissed if I were them, though. Like, if I was the fans, I would have wanted to jump on Cliff the second he got fired.
Yeah, I guess. But, hiring a fired coach from in your conference is never going to be a super popular move, even if I think Kingsbury is possibly a better coach than he's had the chance to show. Like, that's a rough and not a super easy job.
Maybe less high as Cliff.
This year he was really... I mean, maybe. Cliff apparently isn't, like, involved for every big OC.
I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cliff will get another job eventually. And then Rutgers, like, Ash is going to be there. I don't know what to expect from them next year.
they're trash. That's fine. Yeah. They can stay trash.
So if you have to schedule 3 Power 5s and you already are stuck with Notre Dame for a year, which I'm sure BC's fine with since they're rivals, I think you'd probably take those two.
Yeah, I agree there. But yeah, back to Syracuse's schedule. One very likely loss. I'd say one probable loss at Florida State.
If Florida State bounces back, which there's a very good chance. Like, Taggart's a good coach. There's a very good chance they will be markedly better, and they have a ton of talent, and they will have a ton of talent next year. I'm sure they're going to bring in a top 15 class, and 15 they'd be disappointed probably. So, yeah, at Florida State, we should not assume that's going to be an easy game.
No, yeah, I think that's probably a loss. But then, like, even if we got back to 500 in the toss-up games, you're still looking at a 7 or 8 win season.
Yeah, honestly, I think saying like a 7-win floor is pretty reasonable. Like, because you don't know totally what, like, we have a good feeling about DeVito. We don't totally know what he's going to be as a starter. Right. Odds are he's not going to be as like. You know, he's not going to be as bad as he was against Notre Dame, but he's probably not going to be like a game Eric Dungy. He's a very different player. He doesn't have that same kind of ability to totally take over with his legs, obviously. But and then obviously this year, I think we mostly got lucky with injuries. We had a couple here and there, but none that were like super major, and none that really cost us parts of our team like schematically. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're probably looking at 7-win floor, hopefully. And then, like, 9 or 10 win ceiling, maybe higher if DeVito really steps in. But and that's crazy. And I'm hoping that our fan base doesn't go crazy. And if we only win like 8 games next year, that's not a disappointment at all. That's us actually establishing that that's what we are now. Versus, you know, even a couple of years ago when we got to like the Pinstripe Bowl, the next year we fell back and it kind of halted momentum. And then we got back and we lost our coach. So getting to where we can be comfortable winning 8 games-ish, and hopefully, you know, the coaching situation will play itself out, but that's like a huge step forward and something we haven't had since Pastelloni was rolling along in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, Sean kind of hit on this in his article today about Dino Babers, but you have to think that if I think 8 wins, I think people will be all right next year. I think if we only win, only quote-unquote, because I'm still existing in the Syracuse fandom that I existed in before this year, unlike most. If we, quote-unquote, only win 7 games, I feel like there's going to be a whole bunch of freakouts, and that's going to be unfortunate. Doesn't mean that Dino isn't going anywhere, because any potential program that would try to hire him understands what Syracuse was when he inherited it and understands what he's turned it into. And if you can get fans hoping for 4 or 5 wins from the time you get there to getting annoyed with 7, you're obviously a very good coach.
Yeah, and most other places that were like would be looking at Babers would understand that like Syracuse only winning 7 games next year or something would still be an accomplishment coming from where they were. And I think most of our fans, I think a number of our fans would get that. I think there will be a loud... I mean, if this comes to pass, which there's no guarantee of, but like, there would definitely be a loud minority that would be like, "Oh, he's been kind of like smoke and mirrors." But then, like, the second he was to leave, they would also freak out and call him disloyal. So, whatever, you can't really worry about those people, honestly, because they're never going to be happy with how things are going.
I would agree. That should be good for football for now, at least. We might drift back in. Actually, when we get back from halftime, and we're going to halftime now, going to talk a little bit about Tulane, only for like a minute or two, just to give the Green Wave some props for fulfilling the prophecy that we have we've long supported. But before that, Dan, what have you been drinking?
So I had a very, very Connecticut brewery experience, or beer experience, over Thanksgiving weekend, which makes sense, that's where it was. I went to Half Full Brewery in my hometown of Stamford, mostly because they were having a can release of a collaboration with the other Stamford brewery, Locked City, their Stam Vegas Sour IPA, which is a reference to an awful nickname that someone gave our town for no reason, like, years ago. But the beer is really good, really nice blend of a sour flavor. Probably could have been a little bit more balanced, but I mean, I like sours and I like IPAs, and there was like enough hoppiness where I was pretty happy with it. So I had a bunch of that, which they had just put out on Wednesday, so I grabbed up a couple packs of that. I also had their Supernova Blackberry, which was also quite tart, one of their sour ale Supernova series. I had a Positively Pumpkin, which is okay. I've had it before. It's not my favorite pumpkin. And then I also had their Without Rhyme or Reason number 9, which is their double dry hopped IPA series. This was quite good. They do some interesting stuff with double IPAs. They've come a long way since they opened up a couple years ago. I also had some Honey Spot Road from Two Roads, which is always good. And I had a double dry hopped double Mosaic Daydream from Other Half, which is probably the best beer I had this weekend. Other Half always does really good work, and this was really, really delicious.
Very nice. On my end, I was down in Orange County for the holiday. Stopped over at one of my favorite breweries down there, Chapman Crafted. Had a couple options from them. Modern Marvel and Divine Sunshine. Modern Marvel was kind of, they referred to it as like a modern IPA, so it was kind of a lot more West Coast breweries, or like everybody jumped in on the haze train, then everyone kind of like half backed off. So now people are going with like some East Coast, West Coast hybrids, and I feel like some breweries are doing a really nice job with them. Modern Marvel was kind of one of those, so definitely enjoyed that. Snugglebug from Smog City. It's a raspberry and boysenberry sour, always a good one. Also had from Firestone their Luponic Distortion number 11 this time. Some real great citrus flavors, some guava, kind of pineapple, lemon drop, hop flavors in there, so that was really enjoyable. And then the brewery had their new like kind of baked goods can series that they've been doing, so this one was called The Bakery, and it was kind of a coconut macaroon flavored bourbon barrel aged stout, so really enjoyable one there. Feel like there's stuff most places at this point, so if you find it, I would say grab that one on the shelf.
Nice, definitely a solid drinking holiday there.
Yeah, I do like to vary what I'm drinking during the holidays and try out some new stuff. I know next time down Orange County, I already have plans to check out a couple, a brewery or two that just opened up nearby. So, yeah, good times. Basketball-wise, before we get into that, again, mentioned Tulane. Tulane won. We're pretty happy. We haven't really had like a specific Tulane section in quite some time, more because Syracuse has been so good that we haven't drifted off topic as much. But Dan, how much of this game did you get to watch on Saturday?
Very little. I was in the Syracuse game, plus switching off to Ohio State Michigan a bit, which was disgusting. plus, and then I went into the Iron Bowl after that, so I kind of just caught it as the stuff about like them coming back at the end, because they won by 1 point against Navy to clinch bowl eligibility. But very cool for them. It's been like kind of a rough sledding for them. They've picked up some big wins. They've like clearly made some market improvements over the year. And then the Navy win apparently was just like totally thrilling down in the last second. So really happy for those guys. Really ton of progress made, and you can't say enough about it. And they might hold on to Willie Fritz since Kansas didn't want to hire him, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those games where like win probability falls off a cliff for the team that loses. Navy had an 88.2% chance to win this game with 3.5 minutes to go. Then Tulane won with about, well, they scored the winning touchdown with 1.5 minutes to go. Got the 2-point conversion. So awesome stuff for them, finishing 6-6. They actually finished tied for the lead, AAC West, which is like the coastal of the group of five, it seems. Although I'd actually think the AAC West might have better teams than the Coastal does somehow. Especially because Pitt, even if they lost to us, still would have won the Coastal.
They're probably more interesting at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, like, Houston's clearly the best team in this division, but they also just, like, don't do anything with that. So that's why Memphis keeps winning the division. But yeah, Tulane, 5-3 in conference, 6-6 overall. SMU finished right behind them at 4-4. I mean, this is kind of an off year for Navy. Tulsa suddenly looks buried over there, and I don't really know if they're going to be able to get out of that. So yeah, good for the Wave. Looking forward to watching the bowl game. It won't be against Syracuse because we're in the running for some bigger stakes. So that's good. We don't have to feel conflicted.
I'm just imagining
house divided flag.
I'm just imagining how mad people would get if we actually pretended like we were conflicted between Syracuse and the team we adopted for no reason.
Well, we know why it was adopted, because of a dope ass mascot, and then that dope ass mascot became
triple option. There's just a lot to love.
Yeah, and then the dope ass mascot became their actual mascot instead of just like the, you know, pet mascot that we refer to.
It became the mascot, the logo, the dress, the field logo. Just, I don't know, like, they were very smart. Like, you have a very goofy Wave, and you should centerpiece him. He deserves it. He's glorious.
And now look at him. Now he's the illustrious Wave, who will be crashing into some stadium probably in Texas or Alabama or somewhere.
Maybe the New Orleans Bowl usually goes to the, like, Louisiana schools, like the Lafayettes and et cetera, but I don't know, maybe there. I mean, it might be kind of boring for them, but...
There, Birmingham Bowl.
Unfortunately, Pitt will probably not be there to face them, because...
Pitt loses again.
If Pitt gets crushed by Clemson, has to have the Birmingham Bowl and plays Tulane, and there's just, like, how many runs between them?
Yo,
like,
please sign me up for 7-6 Pitt in the Birmingham Bowl.
They'd be so mad. Winning the Coastal.
Winning the Coastal and finishing 7-7 because you...
Have we ever had a college football team finish 7-7? I know we've had 6-8.
I feel like Georgia Tech did once. I know they've done 6-8 too. I feel like Georgia Tech went 7-7 once. UCLA might have gone 7-7 once.
UCLA went 6-8, I think, the one time, because they played Hawaii and then they won the South for some reason.
Oh, because USC and like Arizona State or something were both like ineligible.
Yeah, and then they lost in the Pac-12 championship, so they were 6-7. And then I think they played like Nebraska or something in a bowl game, and they lost.
That nobody wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure
and
somebody's
got like an exemption to go to the bowl, I think, too.
That won't happen this year. I know.
No, we have all too many. Unfortunately, there will be some Group of Five teams that get left out, which is always sad. I always feel bad for them.
Yeah.
Like, we have so many stupid bowl games. Just, like, find a couple more if we have teams. It's like, why not?
I found the team that went 7-7.
Stupid bowl games. Like, I know people, like, hate how big the bowl season is.
Who gives a shit?
Why? Why do you care if Miami, Ohio gets to play a game at 6-6? Like, why are you against that?
The only thing I'm against is the shit.
It's like the one time we, like, give stuff to the student athletes, quote-unquote, for no reason. Like, the thing, times we actually give them stuff on board and, like, they get to, like, reap the benefits is the bowl season when we give them a bunch of gifts. Like, let's not take that away from them if they win their six games. Like, no one's saying that, like, you know, 6-6 Toledo is you know, a postseason team like it is in baseball or something, but it doesn't mean that we can't enjoy a, like, dumb, hilariously sponsored game in some podunk town that no one cares about. Like, yeah. Fun. And it's on, like, December 16th, and there's nothing else happening, so let's enjoy it.
Well, the only thing I'm against, though, is that stupid Mountain West versus Mountain West bowl game a couple years ago.
That was dumb.
Yeah, that crap can go to hell. But the other games, those are fine.
Yeah. The people that are upset about the RNL Carriers Bowl, I'm like, watch that game. It is so much fun. The Bahamas Bowl is always amazing. It's so fun. So, yes, I support all of this. Like, it's college football. A lot of it's just very stupid, so just lean in.
Agreed. Also, I found the 7-7 team. 2016 Hawaii.
Oh, did they? It makes sense.
Yeah.
Nick Rolovich. Really doing... What did they finish it this year? Did they? I know they hit the skids a little bit at the end, but, I mean, still a really nice year for them.
No, they went... I think they went, like, 8-4 because San Diego State was stupid and threw a fade in the... Yeah. San Diego State was stupid and threw a fade at the end of... in overtime instead of, like, they were going for two to just not have to go into seven overtimes as it was going on at the same time as the LSU-Texas A&M game. And then they decided, yeah, despite the fact that we're a running team, we're just gonna throw a fade. And then they threw a fade, and then they threw another fade after there was a penalty on the previous play.
Which, you're San Diego State. What are you doing?
Right. And like, they got into the end zone by running, like, 26 yards, like, untouched.
Yeah, so I'm looking, Hawaii finished 8-5.
Yeah.
With a 5-3 Mountain West record. And honestly, like, their losses, they lost to Army, who was very good this year. They lost to BYU, who just has a lot more talent. And it was at BYU, and also it was at Army. That's a brutal trip. They lost to Nevada, who's, like, they're not good, but they're, like, dangerous enough. They lost at Fresno, and Fresno was awesome. And they lost to Utah State. Utah State was awesome. So, like, they lost to three bona fide really good group of fives, one team that has, like, borderline power five talent, and then another just kind of a weird loss. And then they won 8 games. So, like, that's a really nice year for them.
I agree. I also feel like we're now in tangent territory.
And yeah, that's official.
Like, feel ourselves just, back here. People can start getting pissed. All right. So, quick college basketball thing, and then we're going to talk about Syracuse basketball in particular. The first ever net ratings came out on Monday, and they were a disaster. And this is because the NCAA has decided that they're not going to tell us how they work. They're not going to include any sort of previous marker for teams. So you just kind of go in blind, and then whatever happened, you don't include any previous rankings. You don't really adjust for – you also don't adjust for opponents. So that's cool slash really stupid. And considering the fact that before they created this, they met with Ken Pom, they met with Jay Billis, and a bunch of other people that, like, already had rating systems that were better. And even with that, they still decided to go with this one. So the top 10, for those who didn't see it, Ohio State, a little random. RPI, they're, like, closer to, like, 11, 12. Virginia, fine. Texas Tech, sure. Michigan, sure. Gonzaga, okay. Duke, Michigan State, Wisconsin. Virginia Tech, a little high, but whatever. And Loyola Marymount.
It's very strange. And, like, it's hard to really, like, I want to see what this looks like at the end of the season, but without adjusting for opponent with the efficiency metrics, like, it's going to look, I can't imagine it's not going to look weird the whole time.
They said that they tested this out on past seasons, but, like, there's no point to these metrics if it only fixes itself by the end. Then you might as well not release it at any point until the end.
Right. And if it works well at the end, that's great. Good for them. And that's, like, the point of it. But it's just going to look stupid to release it all year. And it's like, that's like if Bill C didn't bake in, I mean, it's not quite the same, but, like, there's a reason why Bill C bakes in last season's results, why he's always had last season's results for at least part of the season. And then this year he actually kept in a small amount of it throughout the year. It's like, it just balances things out. So, like, when he releases week to week, there are, like, weird results occasionally, but you can at least, especially like this week, he had to tell people why Michigan was still ahead of Ohio State, but at least you can, like, understand why those happened versus this, which is just like, what are we learning? I know nothing about these teams except that Ohio State has two road wins, and, like, It's just bizarre. And, like, if it at the end it works out well, then fine. Like, I look forward to that. But, you know, at least maybe give us, like, real insight into how this was calculated. I know they gave us, like, some, like, a chart and stuff. But I want to, like, just get really granular and at least let us, like, kind of figure this out if you're going to release these on a weekly basis. Because, like, right now the way they rolled it out was, like, to look like a new rating system, like a true new rating system. But it made so little sense on the outset here that, like, it doesn't really have any value.
Yeah, like, I'd love for someone, and I'm not complaining that LMU is there necessarily.
Yeah, and I don't care that Syracuse is 92. I don't, that has no part of this. I'm not thinking, like, we've looked like ass, so I'm not, like, you can say anything about Syracuse basketball, and trust me, I went home to Connecticut for Thanksgiving. I heard a lot. I had nothing to refute it with. I'm like, we've looked really bad, so it doesn't matter to me what you rate us. We don't deserve to be rated anything at this juncture. So it's just, like, the whole thing looks dumb.
Yeah, looking at Loyola, I mean, they beat Georgetown, which I didn't realize, and I wish I had celebrated more.
So they should
at the time.
Be number one.
Yeah, they should be number one right away. But then again, other teams have also beaten Georgetown. But yeah,
the Loyola Paramount thing is, like, well, we actually use a lot of data from 1991 to build this.
Yeah, just that season. so this is what I don't understand. Like, you look at their schedule. They beat Westcliff, D2 team, at UNLV. They beat CSU Northridge. They beat Georgetown. They beat Ohio. Both of those on neutral floors. Oh, Georgetown and Ohio also played an NCAA tournament on a neutral floor, and Ohio beat them. Central Connecticut, they beat by 2. Florida A&M, they beat by 8. Please, someone explain to me how that resume gets you a ranking in the top 10. Because I got nothing.
No, it's so weird just because, like, when you don't have any kind of adjustments and you have no weighting and you have, like, nothing there, there's just, like, I don't know why you roll this out week to week except to, like, get people excited about you changing the RPI, which people are all for because that was a bad system. But at least the RPI, like, you could kind of glean something from it week to week, even if it was, like, stupid math. This, like, there's nothing about what this one, you know, sampling tells us has any real bearing on how the season will play out. So it just, there's nothing here to really get excited or even like learn about other than like, that just, there's just not much here. So it's just very dumb to me, but hopefully by the end it sorts itself out and it makes sense and maybe it will, but I don't know why they can't just like, if they're going to talk to Jerry Palm, like just use Jerry Palm's ranking. Like what are we doing? Or Ken Palm or whoever.
Any of these people really, there's a lot of smart basketball folks. So before we leave, obviously we want to talk a little bit about Syracuse basketball other than saying why they don't deserve to be ranked. SU sort of bounced back against Colgate well enough anyway. Frank Howard.
It was ugly, but we won.
Frank Howard saw the floor. I felt like that was a big improvement and a much needed kind of jolt of energy, some defense in general, just sign of hopefully better things to come. But we face Ohio State, you know, number one in net Ohio State.
Best team in the country right now.
Best team in the country right now, according to a bunk metric. But yeah, nonetheless, they are good. It's just a question of how good. That's the case for everyone. It's early in the season. I'm still very concerned about the Syracuse defense, but I'm much, much more concerned about the Syracuse offense because, you know, Bobby kind of talked about this on Monday. I know Dylan Feiner, one of our new writers, has broken down a couple really nice pieces on this, both on the blog and elsewhere. But this offense really looks exactly the same as last year, despite the fact that everyone was supposed to be better and we added bodies, and I don't really understand why.
It basically, like I'm glad Battle is starting to get it sorted out. He had a really nice game against Colgate, 24 points in 26 minutes, which is good. How Hughes was good. Brissett, just like we had been talking about before, just really doesn't seem to have like changed the or improved on the efficiency issue with his game. Like he still has these really, really poor shooting lines and he gets to the free throw line all the time, which is great. But you want to see him start converting from the field, but the free throw thing, like you have one bad game with a weird set of refs or you have a bad line from the stripe, knife from the stripe, and it like totally sinks you. So that's not great. And then Frank, you know, he only played 19 minutes. He only hit one shot. It was a three. All of his shots came from three, which is a little weird, but maybe he's just, like, a little shy from contact here.
He did work on his three-point shot quite a bit in the offseason, I know, from, like, James talking to him and talking to his trainer. Apparently, like, he's actually, I mean, at least in the offseason, he was nailing him from three. But then again, so were other people, and they're not doing that right now.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm not worried about Frank's performance in his first game back. Dolezal is still kind of quiet. I mean, it's basically all what we saw before. Sidibe did score 11. It'd be great if he comes along offensively because we've gotten nothing from Chukwu yet this year. And I was hoping, and he only played 4 minutes the other night. I was hoping that we'd see more there. But it's been rough. Terry had a down night. Buddy Boeheim had another quiet night. I think Buddy's probably going to fall out of the rotation if I had to guess by ACC play. He's just not ready yet. Same with Braswell, who is not really in it yet, and Howard Washington is kind of an enigma. But yeah, we just haven't, like, if Brissett starts playing more efficiently, that's going to be huge. I'm not really worried about Tyus. I think he's shown enough the last couple of games that he's pretty much back on track. Elijah's been good, but the center position's been pretty much a zero. And Marek has not really contributed much. So it's like the step forwards that we expected have not really come. And, you added Hughes, but that he's not, you know, a savior. So, and we haven't really had a full Frank. So maybe when Frank, you know, maybe if we get last year's Frank and Hughes is, you know, as good as he's looked, you know, that's a better team, but it's not so much better. And it's still kind of disappointing based on what we thought we were getting. So the Trojan game was ugly. I had to watch it after the fact. I couldn't watch it live. They were very, very tight in the first half. I think we were up 3. We blew them out in the second half. So pretty standard story there. But Ohio State's going to be a real challenge. And also a big opportunity, because I think if you beat Ohio State in Columbus, I think you get rid of a lot of the concerns. Maybe not get rid of, but I think it helps quell the concerns from the MSG debacles.
Yeah, and then you also, like, kind of, I mean, you eliminate basically the UConn loss with a win over a top 25 squad on the road. I mean, especially with the you know, net ratings, actual importance for some stupid reason, but the net ratings emphasis on true road games. Ohio State's not an easy nut to crack, and that's, I guess, a pun.
Oh, it's a pun.
I'll give it to myself. That was actually a pretty good one.
Was that even intentional? I couldn't tell.
That was not intentional, but then, like, as I was saying, I'm like, ah, yeah.
I was going to call it out if you didn't, so.
Yeah, we're dad joking over here.
Literally on your end.
Yeah, literally. But yeah, Ohio State is, they got a pretty deep rotation, and this is exactly the type of thing that would, like, send me into a panic last year. This year, a little less so, especially now that Frank's back. I don't know how many minutes Frank's going to be ready to play here. The fact that we've only played one game in the last, like, I don't know what, 10 days is pretty helpful. I think that that's going to help Frank hopefully come back at least maybe a 25-minute capacity. Really, if we can get the five guys you would expect to score 10 to 12 points a game at minimum, like, going, we should be okay. Against anyone, to be honest, not that's not a slight to Ohio State. I think in general, because our defense is supposed to be pretty good, we should be okay. But, like, this team's kind of dangerous. They've got four guys who can hit threes with some sort of efficiency. They have guys who can get to the free throw line. CJ Jackson's done that pretty well this year. In general, all their shooters are pretty good. I mean, their first, what, eight guys in the rotation all shoot 42% or better from the floor. That's terrifying for Syracuse team, because no matter how good the zone is, you're not going to be able to stop them from everywhere. I think on the boards we might be able to stand a chance. It's really going to come down to, you know, how Frank continues to evolve into the player he's supposed to be this year, though, and how he impacts things in the defensive end, but more importantly on the offensive end, to me, because I think you saw when he was on the floor, you know, he had five assists in a short amount of time. Like, having him out there is clearly going to make this team move the ball better and more efficiently, and hopefully, you know, not do a lot of the standing around that we've seen to this point. So I think we lose to Ohio State, but it wouldn't surprise me if we saw a very different looking team against the Buckeyes on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think the one advantage you alluded to with the rebounding, which should have been an advantage in the UConn game and didn't end up proving out that way, but Ohio State is not very big. They have four guards who play a lot, who are all between 6'1 and 6'3, and then their main front court guys, Andre Wesson, 6'6, Caleb Wesson, 6'9, Kyle Young, 6'8. So not a real huge team in terms of, those are their top, I think, 7 minutes guys. They have and then number 8 is Musa Jallo, who's only 6'5. I think Jason Lede is a little bigger, he's 6'9, but it's not like he's only playing about 10 minutes a game, so there just isn't a ton of bulk up front. So if we're to get a nice Chukwu game, this would be a really good spot for it. And our guards are just going to have a size advantage across the board, aside from, like, Carey, who's the size of their guards. So maybe the zone can be kind of disruptive. It's not something they see a lot of in the Big Ten. I have some hope there. As long as we look competitive, I'll be pretty happy, because I do think this is a good Buckeyes team, net rating or not. They're a tournament team. They have experience. They have some talented freshmen, so even a loss here, like, won't totally freak me out. But if we, as long as we look good, because that's my biggest concern, is that just we haven't looked right at all this year. And even if we lose, if we're, like, competitive and are hanging with a top 16 team on the road, I think that's a step, or at least, you know, to take some of the nerves away. And like you said, I think the break definitely helps with the Frank issue. It's been nice to only have this one game in the last, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think, you know, it's funny, like, that we did silly, I mean, at least on my end, like, I did something like convince myself Syracuse could go unbeaten in non-conference play.
I mean, that used to be the norm.
It was, before we, like, started actually scheduling teams in non-conference.
My 4 years there, like, we beat Michigan State, we beat Florida a couple times, like, we had some good games.
We did.
We were, there were, like, I think, probably 3 of my 4 years there, we didn't lose a non-conference.
Well, that was also like, you know, the golden era of modern Syracuse basketball anyway, of like, those are the teams that were, you know, top line material every year. I mean, when I first got there, was it freshman or sophomore year? We lost to Cleveland State. We lost to Oklahoma State.
That was my, my freshman year. That was 08 in the Cleveland State game. It was right after, I think, during Thanksgiving break. And that was the only loss I think we had for like 2 years in non-conference, 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah, that was my junior year then. But yeah, we had some really nice runs in there. I feel like you don't really want more than 2 losses in non-conference play, especially for like SU. Just, we haven't really done a ton of that in ever, to be honest. But I mean, you look at the rest of this run after Ohio State, like, you've got probably 4 wins. I mean, Georgetown, for some reason, always gets interesting, but Cornell, Northeastern, Georgetown, Old Dominion, like, you should be at worst 7-3 heading into the Buffalo game. Buffalo is kind of scary, and I think they know how to play us and beat us.
They're quite scary.
Yeah, I don't really want to face them, but if you beat them, like, yeah, I think if we go 1-2, to be honest, against Oregon, Ohio State, and Buffalo, it doesn't really matter which of those teams you beat. Obviously Ohio State would matter the most from a numbers standpoint just because they're on the road, but if you go 1-2 against those three teams, I think most people would probably take that, and that definitely helps the computer numbers a bit if you start getting better and improving and picking up some better wins in ACC play.
Yeah, and if we beat both of these, then I think a lot of our concerns are mostly quelled, plus throw in the Georgetown win just for, you know, obvious reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone, we're not the types that would define our season by beating Georgetown, especially now. I don't think we ever were, really. But a Hoyas win is kind of a bare minimum for my season.
Yeah, it's also just a nice, you know, it's just a nice, it's a good feeling. Sets you up for a nice just day overall. And also, like, we've lost to them too much recently when they've been bad. Like, we just need to win that game, especially at the Dome.
Aren't we, like, do we have, like, a really stupid record against former Big East schools, like, since we left?
We beat Villanova. I think we split with Villanova in that series. We've
lost, like, 2 or 3 straight to St. John's.
Yeah, it just hasn't been great, I guess. I think we're 2-2 against UConn now.
Yeah. And we're still, like, 1-2 against Georgetown.
It's dumb. Yeah, it's not great. And I think that's probably all we've played, so I can't think of anyone else we've played.
No, I don't think there's anyone else we will play.
No, that's the list.
Yeah, I mean, like, if we faced Providence, Seton Hall. Ah, damn. Well, you don't want to break up the best rivalry in sports, Seton Hall and
Syracuse,
Rutgers.
USF.
A battle for tie-dye.
A battle for, they were really mad when Johnny Flynn threw that stupid windmill down when we only won by 4 once.
I mean, I was probably mad about it, to be honest.
It was Bush League, but
whatever. We still do stupid shit like throw alley-oops when we're up 1, which I'm always like, why? Because like, you know, Jim Boeheim's like seething on the sidelines.
No, there's no way he likes it.
No. Anyway, so I guess we don't really need to give a prediction on Ohio State. I feel like we both think they could probably lose. But hey, if they win, great.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's pretty competitive. I still have hope that we are a much better team than we've shown. But Ohio State's good, so I'm not going to. There's nothing we've really seen from this team that says that we're going to go into Columbus and beat Ohio State. So I'm not going to be like ridiculous homer.
Oh, I'm with you. So yeah, I think that wraps us up for today. Hopefully, we've beaten Ohio State the next time we talk. Hopefully, well, we will know where Syracuse is bowling the next time we talk. So that'll be a fun conversation.
Probably Orlando, and I'm pretty sure I'll be there if that is the case. I'll be in Pinstripe, obviously, and I'm pretty positive I'll be at the Tampa World Bowl if that is the destination, which it does seem like most indications are that we have a very good shot of it. And it'll be probably against West Virginia, maybe Iowa State, maybe Texas if Oklahoma beats them.
Nah, give me West Virginia. Let's do this.
I'm down for some points.
It's gonna be the pointiest bowl game ever.
Oh, it's gonna be so good. People are gonna love it. Like, it's gonna be Twitter's favorite bowl game, which I'm all for. I'm down to let it ride here with Dina.
I would agree. Dan, anything else before we head out?
No, as a Green Bay Packers fan, it's been very weird to like rest on the Syracuse football program to give me my happiness in the gridiron. So I do appreciate them choosing this year to be the 9-1 season.
I'm with you. Cool. So that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy News and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.